proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebuilds.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebuilds.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebuilds.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebuilds.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Let's call it hour three, a little bit, a minute or two before, and it's been too long since Staten Fleury has joined us, and thought it was a good opportunity. Brad Cox not available this week, and so I said, let me get Staten on, and actually, you were supposed to be part of our panel at Hot Springs, and then you had to scratch, so this is, we'll make it part of the... can make it part of that panel discussion, except it'll be just you. Congratulations on the Black Eyed Susan win, Interstate Daydream. Staten, well done.
Hey, I appreciate it. She won a huge race, and glad to get her a graded victory.
Well, and, you know, we handicapped, you know, going into Friday, and one of the things about the opportunity with her is that what I described as a post-hype situation after the big win, you know, before the Ashland, the big figure and a lot of attention. It was, you know, very easy to get on board. And, you know, she ran into nice horses in the grade one. This was a chance to go back to her. And, you know, 6-1 was a very attractive number.
Yeah. And right before they loaded in the post, she was sitting at 10-1 and it dropped just like that to 6-1. We were kind of shocked, but no, she ran a great race at Oaklawn, and the 2.5-3 weeks in between Oaklawn and Ashland kind of put us in a bind. But that was about our only option to run her and try to get her Oaks points. And if she ran a big race or won the race, we were probably going to look at the Oaks. But the moment she crossed the finish line at Keeneland, Brad and I looked at each other and said, "Let's shoot for the Black Eyed Susan." That gives us plenty of time in between races, and it worked out perfect for us.
Let's get a little backstory, because even though I did, I know that I've talked a couple different times to Brad, maybe last summer, you know, when she participated in the Adirondack, then certainly, you know, in May or in March or April when, you know, she had the big performance. But talk about picking her out and you know, the development side of this from your end. And this is a horse that you have, you know, your name on alone,
yep.
You know, Fleury Racing. You very frequently you partner up with people, but this one was all you.
Here lately we partnered with some different people, but now this one's all me. Last year my bloodstock agent was down at OBS April from day one. He said, "This is the horse we have to buy." He was high on her from the get-go, and we wound up buying her. And we expected her to be a two-turn horse from the get-go. Then she got to Churchill and started breezing with Brad right after the sale, and she was breezing just lights out. That's why we ran her up at Belmont so quick. She broke her maiden first out, then we wheeled her back in the Adirondack just because it was a little longer. I believe it was 6.5, and if it had been 7, we'd probably get to the winner. Then she just had a minor little setback. We gave her some time to mature, brought her back at Oaklawn, and we entered her in a few races there, and they just didn't go. So that's why we wound up having to run her so late and so close to the preps for the Oaks, the Fantasy or the Ashland. And the Ashland just gave us another week to prepare, and we ran her in there, and she ran a solid third. She ran into Nest, who seemed like a buzzsaw at the time, and wound up running second in the Oaks. And that she's just proved us right that she is a two-turn horse, but she does have some early speed if needed.
She, much like the sibling, there was a sister last year, actually, that because this is an Ontario bred, and of course, right away
Emmeline or Emmeline.
There you go. Yep. Exactly. That was second in the Woodbine Oaks last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's a race that's on our radar. We're not going to commit to it just yet, but definitely the Woodbine Oaks, the CCA Oaks. Just see how everything shapes out, and definitely have some big plans in our future, hopefully.
Well, this is a very nice development, too, for Classic Empire. You mentioned the OBS purchase, $175,000 as an April OBS two-year-old, and that had to be a pretty good number, I'm going to guess, for the Classic Empires with his first two-year-olds.
Yeah, I think that was one of the upper-end prices for that sale. I know there was a couple more later on in the year that sold for a little higher up at Fayzig, Maryland. I think it was Morello that's actually turned into a really nice horse. And there was one other filly up there that we liked, and we just got outbid on and let them go. But now we've been very impressed with what we've seen with all the Classic Empires so far. They seem like they all got quite a bit of sense to them and very forward.
Well, this is out of a Uncle Mo mare named Babcock, and Emmeline is right. She's a violence filly, and taking a look here, she had second in the Woodbine Oaks, and second in the Bison
City. Second or third over the weekend in just a allowance race. But
there you
seems
go.
Like that whole family is full of runners.
Well, and I'm you got me curious with the sale tomorrow starting. Let's see if there's, the mare, there's nothing behind Interstate Daydream, so the mare may have.
The mare is actually in, I believe, Saudi Arabia right now.
There you go.
Owner's contacting me through social media, kind of wondering how Interstate Daydream's been doing this year and leading up. And I want to say she's in fold to No Name Never over there.
How about that? All right. So now that, but just remember, no one around the world, they don't want our blood stock, except that they do. talk a little bit about, how your ownership. It's probably been, I don't know, 3 years since you visited with us last. I'm sure revolving around She Dares the Devil. Talk a little bit about how your approach has changed, and what you've learned along the way.
Just we're going after more quality here lately. I've got Clayshare. I've sent my bloodstock agent. He's great at picking out young talent, whether it's at the yearling sale or the 2-year-old sale. And we just try to stick with allowance to stakes horses here lately, except for Oaklawn. I try to gear up since Oaklawn is home, try to come in with as many as possible, whether they're claimers all the way up to the best. And during the summer, we just try to focus on getting everything claimed towards the end of Oaklawn and having just fun racing allowance and stakes races and getting the 2-year-olds developed and ready to roll for the rest of the year.
Explain it to everybody, your origins. You're an Arkansas native. Explain your origins around the game and how you got into it, and then you know, then the ownership side.
All right, yeah. Born and raised in Hot Springs. I'm 31 years old. Graduated from Henderson State University, right south of Hot Springs, and we, my family, we own the parking lots around Oakland, so I've grown up out there as long as I had sense enough not to run out in front of a car, and just met different owners and trainers and people in the industry, and they'd always, hey, come over, watch a horse run, come get the wind picture, and fell in love with it early on, and when I graduated college, I claimed my first horse, won our second race, and I've been hooked ever since. That was 10 years ago. So we've had an excellent run the last 10 years, been very, very fortunate, just especially the people I've been connected with. That's made the difference.
Well, and part of that cast of individuals that, you know, that have really had you be as successful really as any, you know, as anybody operating. I mean, the percentage of success that you've had, high profile success, is really good. Obviously, Mr. Misunderstood, and She Dares the Devil, and now here's this filly. You really latched on to Brad Cox as Brad was, you know, starting to, yeah, you know, as his train was pulling out of the station.
Yeah, the guy I was using early on, he was an assistant for Cody Autry. Him and Cody Autry parted ways. Kevin got hired on by Carl Broberg. Carl sent him to Fairgrounds that year instead of Oaklawn. This was 2013. Kevin introduced me to Brad. He said, hey, this is the next up-and-coming young guy in the sport. This is who I want you to be with. So I got with Brad 2013. I think he had 8 or 10 cheap claimers in his barn. Claimed one, won our first race, and I've been with him 9 going on 10 years now, and that's how I still have the horses with Broberg. I followed his assistant to him, and we have my claimers, and Brad gets the Kentucky quality.
Well, and has certainly, you know, has certainly made that a success. I mean, and has
absolutely
come through for you on that front. Yeah.
Yeah, I was with Brad, and like I said, he was sharing a barn with Jinx Fires at Oakland the first year we were together, and I think the best horse he had in his barn might have been a starter horse. A couple years later, he got carved and won his first graded race, and it's just been uphill ever since.
What advice, and this is some of the questions or some of the things we were going to talk about at the HBPA convention at Hot Springs, what advice do you have for aspiring owners and people who are either intimidated or are worried that they don't know enough, that you know, that they don't have a feel for how to approach it?
Find somebody you can trust and somebody you can communicate with. That's the key, whether it's a trainer that you've met before and they've said, hey, if you ever want a horse, let's talk, or do the vetting process. Don't just say, hey, this is the big guy right now, let's hire him. Find somebody that you can communicate with. That's the number one thing in my books. That's with Brad. He's more like part of the family than a trainer at this point. Because I said, I think he's got maybe one owner that's been with him longer than I have at this point. So he and I communicate well, and whether it's through text, calls. And I know there's a lot of trainers out there that they'd rather have their assistants or racing managers communicate. And that's just not my style. I want to talk one-on-one with who's taking care of my horses and who's laying eyes on them. And that's what I suggest for everybody that's getting in the sport.
You know, it's certainly, and it's good advice, and it's certainly notable when you think about it, and I'm sure I could name any racetrack, any venue, and, you know, there's a roster of prominent local owners. But because of the uniqueness of Hot Springs and because of how, you know, special racing is to the community and, you know, those that are engaged, you know, by it, it is amazing how many how many operations are either central to or evolve out of there. I mean, between you and Danny Caldwell, and Danny operates on a widespread basis, but the Lieblongs, John Ed Anthony, right? Short Leaf, Marshall Graham and Clay with Ten Strike. How about Dash Goff? I mean, there's really a remarkable hotbed, quote unquote, when it comes to the Hot Springs and just how much everybody there, you know, cherishes being involved in the game.
Hot Springs during race meet lives and breathes horse racing. Whether you're going to dinner, all the restaurants have wind pictures hanging up. People know you around town. Hey, congrats. Good run today. You're just the town during race season. It's quote unquote the fifth season there. And you got race season and you've got summer lake season. And during race season, the town is all in.
Well, and what I was the two weeks I was staying with Hammer on Lake Hamilton, we could have gone ice skating actually in March.
That was a cold snap during March. I remember that all too well.
Too funny, you know, when you have the kind of success that you had with She Dares the Devil, and I mean, we'll see where things go with Interstate Daydream, but she sold for how much when she went to
She Dares the Devil,
went to the bloodstock sale
for $5 million.
And how do you decide how much of your piece goes back into the game, you know, because this is an important part, and I do want to ask you about breeding, and you know, because there's plenty of people that, you know, that operate the way you've gotten into the game. And I remember asking Bob Edwards when you know, he came in with a big splash, and I said, you know, what about breeding? And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. And then sure enough, you know, you get your hands on a filly that you have great affection for, and you just can't let go. And so talk about, you know, that portion of this and, you know, selling at the top of the market and taking money off the table.
Yeah, I've got one real brood mare that I raced. She was an Arkansas bred. We've kept her in the Arkansas program here lately. Kept her as a broodmare. I don't have the land, don't have the means really to keep a big string of broodmares. I've got a couple with a couple buddies in Kentucky, just little pieces here and there. And I've actually got She Dares the Devil's dead sister. We bought her as a yearling, and she had a little injury and never got to start her. So she's actually in foal authentic now. Still weighing whether we're going to sell her in foal or kind of keep her as part of the broodmare band, but more than likely we'll wind up selling her just because I want the action. I want the racing action, the yearling breaking 2 year old kind of action. But the whole broodmare deal, breeding deal, isn't really my forte, but if it happens down the road with something like Interstate Daydream, she's definitely earned the right to to have some good babies.
There you go. You must have named her, right?
Yes. Interstate Daydream. Yep.
And what's the genesis of the Interstate Daydreaming?
We needed a name, and there's a band I'm a big fan of called Turnpike Troubadours, and there's a line in one of their songs that says, "You ain't nothing, just an interstate daydream." And I said, "Interstate Daydream, that sounds like a good horse name."
You must keep, because I know, I mean, I do, you must keep a list somewhere on the computer of horse names. I've got a file.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's crazy is so many of the ones you think there's zero chance of them being taken, they're the ones that are taken. Oh,
no doubt.
It's, naming and, or, naming horses is some of the hardest part of the game. Is you submit one, it comes back, take it, and you submit another one, take it. Sometimes it's a 5-6 try deal.
No doubt. And you know, then the worst thing that happens is, have you tried to name one after friends or family?
Not really. I heard from the get-go that that's usually bad luck. Usually slows them down.
There aren't too many named Frankel that, you know, when Prince Khalid, when the call obviously came that this one might be good, this one might be a good one to name after Bobby. That doesn't happen all that often.
No, it doesn't. Even I've named some after different athletes and stuff, and they've been good but never been great. Where it seems like just random phrases or words usually does the trick.
Well, the other thing, too, that we should mention, because I know I brought it up with you the first time we talked, and that is the silks. You got to have a lot of compliments, because they are, with that snowflake, it's a really distinctive jacket and nicely done.
Thank you. Yeah, it takes every now and then, it takes somebody a little bit for it to click that snowflake and flurry, they put two and two together, and like that was really smart. And I've got the black and white checkers on the sleeve. I'm a big auto racing fan, so we did the black and white checkers like a checkered flag, and it's worked out well for us. They're easy to spot.
It's a great jacket. Exactly. Well, that's I used the neon when we did our jacket. I had the late Stanley Ettinger. I asked him for advice, and he said, if you got a partnership group, he said, use a neon color. It'll be easy for partners to see the horse, and if it's a bright, flashy color. So that was my motivation with the neon, the lime green. That's the idea. There's so many little we talk about decision making and like you talked about finding somebody to trust on the entree into the game. But then there's all these silly, elements of it that are fun and you put as much time and effort into things like designing the jacket and those kinds of parts of it. Then the names. Exactly.
But that's what keeps everybody occupied in this game. You got to keep thinking ahead. What's the next name? What's the next big horse we're going to get? Who do we want to name it after? What do we want to accomplish with it? So, no, that's definitely what keeps the wheels turning in this game.
Staten Fleury's with us. We're talking about Interstate Daydream's terrific effort. And really, the way she won on Friday, Staten, she more or less had the same kind of trip and took the same kind of approach that early voting did on Saturday.
Yeah, Brad and I talked, this was Thursday night, just kind of what we expected or how we expected it to play out. He said speed bias and kind of rail bias at Pimlico's been the way to go the last few years. He's like, man, hopefully we can break good, sit her up close and not be too far off the rail and make a late run. And when we rounded the last turn, man, I think we've got it, because it didn't seem like any of the horses behind us were making up any ground. They all were just kind of treading water and standing still, and seemed like Flo had a lot left in the tank, and it worked out perfect.
You mentioned that, and for those that haven't watched the replay or if you didn't see the race live, you can see that the Florent is not asking at all. And Beguine has, it's funny, Beguine really stopped it, and my initial thought was that she bled, but Danny Pite said she's fine, and he said he thought she bled, but she scoped clean. But you could see that Johnny's asking Adair Manor to keep up, and anybody that was chasing, they were all scrubbing, and Florent had barely moved. Mm-hmm. And when he basically put her nose in front, that was it. And then he asked, and that race was in hand. pretty much very similar. I'm telling you, if you were to watch those side by side, if you got those video editing where you can watch things, watch that and early voting on Saturday in the Preakness. I mean, obviously, you know, different distance, but similar.
And too with her, you go back to her very first start. She's been battle tested at. She had to really dig in, and she looked another horse in the eye when she broke her maiden and battled on. Where so many horses coming into this race, they just got an easy lead and never really had to dig down and fight on. And I think that definitely had a lot to do with how she's matured throughout her career.
What do you, Brad is off this week, so... don't know if you've had a chance to, at least you've had an extra 24 hours than going back to Friday. Any feel for what might be next?
Probably the Woodbine Oaks or the CCA Oaks. I think those are the two on our radar. Something pops up, maybe Indiana Oaks or something like that, early part of July. But I'd say one of those two, Woodbine or CCA Oaks.
Well, of course, going to Woodbine would mean, you know, she'd have to negotiate the tapita and the synthetic surface.
Which,
so that's the
unknown. She trained up at Keeneland over the training track before when she was coming off her a little layoff. So, and she seemed to like that pretty good. So I don't think it would be too much of an issue, but you never know till you actually get out there and run on it.
Well, pretty much every decision or a good majority of the decisions that you and Brad make together, and you mentioned Clay Shearer, the work that goes into the Fleury Racing Stable, a lot of success, and Staten, continued success. We'll see you somewhere along the lines this summer, I imagine, and well done. Congratulations again.
I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on.
Staten Fleury, everybody, and another big filly. You know, you get a horse like She Dares the Devil, and you think, you know, it might be a long time before we get another one. It wasn't that long. And, of course, he also had Mr. Misunderstood as well, and others. He's had some other stake ones, but those are the big, those are the big names. Has really done well, and... really nice, pretty fun, and I now I'm hearing from Nick McMakin, and he just tweeted, he asked Staten about the name, and now I think everybody's going to have to look up the Turnpike Troubadours, who are out of Oklahoma. Very cool. All right, so now we got a band to check out, Turnpike Troubadours. TP Troubadours on Twitter. Johnny D is going to join us and probably spend the rest of the morning with Johnny to do some dissecting of the weekend. Johnny.
Stevie, how are you this morning?
Excellent. Excellent. You know, as always, after one of these weekends, a lot to digest and probably a little bit more than usual given all the teeth gnashing and hand wringing around Epicenter and around this Triple Crown conversation. What was your immediate take coming out of Saturday's feature?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been actually listening this morning. I usually don't listen to you because I don't really like the show that much. But this morning I was listening. This morning I was listening, and I listen a lot, actually. And in your open, when you kind of rehashed the race and explained what you saw, and then following what Mig said, it's amazing because I kind of thought very similar things, especially when Mig said that, you know, when jockeys, when they win, get too much credit, and when they get beat, they get too much blame. I kind of compared that. Before he said it, I had it in my mind that, that was the case, a lot like NFL quarterbacks, where, you know, the game is in your hands. You touch the football in every play, and what happens really revolves around you. But there are other guys involved, and there are extenuating circumstances sometimes, that it's not always your fault. Or the brunt of the blame should not fall on you. And you have teammates. And certainly, Jockey has a teammate. And on Saturday, Joel Rosario, his teammate, was the favorite in the race, epicenter, heavy favorite. And I kind of, Big pointed out that epicenter didn't leave the gate as aggressively as he has in the past. And that kind of put that team, in a tough position. So Rosario had to make a decision. And he made a decision to drop down the inside, which you analyzed perfectly, and that was the place to be and all that. And Joel's, if he's not the best, he's one of the best right now. It was an expert decision. And he knows, while epicenter didn't break poorly, he just didn't break as well as he usually does. Excuse me. And I think Joel thought that epicenter would leave there, certainly along with the nine horse, Skippy Longstocking, and that maybe Armagnac was going to have some speed, and that Armagnac would clear, and then he'd drop in just behind Armagnac and follow that one into the turn. That probably was his plan. But when he didn't come out, when epicenter didn't break real sharply, you know, the worst thing to do, and I say this from decades of watching races and from talking to jocks, working with jocks, the worst thing you can do is rush your horse off the seat. And one of the good things that Joel does, one of the excellent things he does, is he lets the horse gather himself. And Nick pointed that out very well. So Joel let him gather himself. Now, in the meantime, what's going on up front? Well, you know, turns out you had a talented young horse, Early Voting, who was trained to the minute for this race, pointed toward this race by one of the nation's top conditioners. He worked superbly for the race. He had a bullet minute, best of 11 at Belmont in his final work, which if you know Cad Brown, you look at workouts and look at that and say, oh, wow, you know, he usually doesn't post a bullet work with his horses. Usually they're kind of the 102 on May 6th is much more a Cad Brown work. So that's got to pick your head up. He didn't run in the Derby, pointed for this race, for a variety of reasons. And I laugh because this, all the talk about the Triple Crown, about changing it all, last time we spoke, I said, look, leave it alone. It's for great horses. You're supposed to be great. You not only have to be great, you have to be durable. You have to be experienced. You have to be trained. You have to be lucky. Well, when you look at Epicenter's Triple Crown run so far, two legs of it, the first one, he was certainly good enough to win the Derby, and he was certainly trained well enough to win the Derby. He ran a very good race. Circumstances set up so that another horse had a perfect trip. He didn't get very lucky. You get to the Preakness, he doesn't break as alertly as probably he should, or as he usually does. He gets in behind horses. He runs another fine race. He gets beat. He finishes second. So that's why the Triple Crown is what it is. You not only have to be now. Did, as Mick said, we don't know the ins and outs, and we don't know any. Did Epicenter break slowly because, you know, it takes a little bit out of you. Maybe he's getting a little, you know, but he put in a good run at the end, so you can't say he wasn't, you know, on a good part of his game. He was certainly. But the Triple Crown is special, and it's reserved for special horses. And you can be upset by a talented, sharp, new shooter. That's right, a new shooter, Steve. I know you hate that term, but the term fits. That's what it means, a new shooter. This is a new gun in town. He wasn't in town for the Derby, but here he is. And you know what? He was quicker on the draw on this particular day than at the center. You know, is early voting a better horse? And I use that in air quotes, better horse than the Epicenter? I don't, at this stage, maybe he'll become, I think Epicenter's a very good horse. He's just not a Triple Crown winner, but he's a very good horse. And, you know, circumstances have conspired against him to put his team 0-2 in a three-game series. But they played really well in the two games. And the quarterback, you know, you can rave about Joel's Derby ride, which I think he rode an excellent race, even though obviously I didn't have the winner and all my eggs were in the Epicenter basket. And in the Preakness, I put all my eggs in the Epicenter basket. And they're all cracked now. All my eggs are cracked.
Well, you got the hen house has got plenty of time. It's got 3 weeks to load up, get a couple dozen for Belmont. Exactly. A couple of things, Johnny. I mean, I don't know. You said you were listening, so I had mentioned that the format again. Like we laid out first in the Derby, and then laid out, for Preakness, the way in which you explain the handicapping process of asking yourself, you know, can I see this horse winning? Can I see this horse hitting the board? The whole trickle down theory. I mean, the way in which you categorize the players, it does provide the format, and it's funny, for years, Johnny, we would talk about the contenders, but I don't remember you and I having such a specific conversation about the ticket building aspect as we've had, frankly, after Derby and now right now for Preakness. But that concept is obviously valuable, you know, Monday through Sunday. It doesn't have to be a Triple Crown weekend to utilize it. You can utilize it today at Parks.
Well, that's all true. And the ticket-making aspect is something that I've tried to learn more about in the last 4 or 5 years, which, as long as I've been around the game, you know, just a little side, the other thing that's changed about the game is that we have so many more exotics now. You know, you have your pick fives, your pick sixes, your pick fours, trifecta, superfecta. You have so many more exotics that ticket building, in my racing career, I wondered, because I asked myself, why didn't I spend more time learning how to construct tickets? Why didn't I study that more? Why didn't I learn more of that? And I think I didn't learn more of it because it wasn't as the body of knowledge surrounding ticket making wasn't as great certainly not in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, you've got to get to the late 90s. 2000, I may be stretching it, but around that time, I don't know when Steve Chris, what was it called?
Exotic Betting.
Exotic Betting, when that book came out. But he kind of, you know, put his toe into that. And I remember there was some of the, of course, in Southern California, the pick six was the major play of the day. And it was $2 back then. And so you really... You know, and ABC tickets, there was a structure. I remember the guys in the press box got together and put tickets together. And there was an ABC kind of structure, but there really wasn't this in-depth education or sea of knowledge that you could tap into. But now with social media, I've heard people talk on podcasts, and I've read stuff on Twitter and online about the importance of ranking your opinion in a race, and looking and thinking about the wagering part. We dedicate so much time to handicapping. We don't put as much time, nearly as much time, in ticket building or in fine-tuning your selections. And also, breaking eggs and making, having opinions. You've got to have opinions. You've got to say, okay, I like Epicenter quite a bit more than I like early voting. I mean, was I surprised that early voting won? No, not at all. I just thought that Epicenter was more likely to win in my mind. I didn't think he was going to break a half a step slowly. And I assumed he'd be just off the pace. Excuse me. He would have been that much closer to early voting when they turned for home. And maybe he would have run them down. Maybe not. I don't know. But I thought that that was the most likely scenario. So, but to think about that for every race, It's difficult because we're pressed for time. We're handicapping. Maybe we start 15 minutes before the race and we start to dig through and we look and blah, blah. But it's an important aspect of playing the races. And I certainly in my career have not, as a handicapper, haven't directed enough attention to that over the years. Your method of a put ranking horses, now no. Not necessarily making the ABC ticket, but that's the next extension to it. But the first step is to rank, who's most likely to win it, who do you like next most likely to win it, who do you like next, who do you see hitting? There are some horses you want to use for fourth, but you don't want to use them at all to win because you don't think they can win. Can they win? Sure, anything can happen. But what is your opinion? And then, critically, on top of that, what are the odds on each horse? Because a horse that you don't like at 2-1, you may say, I have to use this horse to be 5-1. I have to use him on top of 5-1.
Pause there, because that's part of the fascinating aspect of Saturday. And we can also even fold in the Black Eyed Susan separately, where we knew there was going to be some potential, overlay opportunities. But what did you make of that board in the Preakness? If you know that early voting is going to be 6-1 by around post time, how do you not gravitate in that direction? Of course, we're doing work leading up for 2 weeks and speculating, yeah. And you just can't conceive that he's going to be a $13.40 winner. Shocking to me.
I actually, to tell you the truth, when I looked at the line and saw 7-2 morning line and early voting, I thought that was high.
Interesting.
I thought he'd be 3-1. I mean, Chad Brown, he's done this before. This horse is training great. The only thing was in the wood, he was run down. He had an open lead. He was run down. And that wasn't a boost. But he ran up. His figure was fine. He trained well since. His only third start. There were plenty of reasons that you could have given him pass. Six to one. It's almost like they don't like him. You know?
Oh, that yeah.
Which is
they know.
Yeah, you start looking at odds, and sometimes they'll send you in the wrong direction. Or your, let's put it a different way, your interpretation of what the odds are will send you in on a wild goose chase. Either a horse taking more money than you thought it should take, or my favorite, as long as we're talking about this, my favorite is a horse who's taking action, and I'm looking at the form, and I don't see it. I don't see where it's not on the paper why this horse is taking. I do not understand why this horse is taking money. And there's, I don't want to say there's one race because there's not. But you will see them throughout the day. There's more than one. They won't always win, but they will run well. They will run probably better than the paper says they should. And that's when I pick my head up. When I look at one and I see get it taking money that I don't understand. Because they do know. It, you know, the money coming in and making up that, there was a trainer in California long time ago. I don't know. Back when we were around and anyone that remembers John Pappalardo, who was a trainer in California who also could be found every afternoon in the turf club trying to beat the races or in the clubhouse somewhere. And he was famous for, if you looked at his form, he's one of those guys that has all the pens, the different colored pens, and he's got different things highlighted on the, and he's got speed highlighted, and then he's got closers of a different color, and it looks like a rainbow when he's finished with each race. And he would say, look at it. Look at it. It's a tote board. It's circuits. It's electricity. It's light. It blinks, and it's just, and at the end of the day, it turns off, and it turns on. And how does it know? How does it know what? How does it know how these horses are going to run? It's circuits and lights and electricity. How does it know?
But it knows. So they do. They
do. It do know. Because, look, this money, it's like when you're betting a football game, it comes down the last second, the last play of the game, a 40-yard field goal, and it lands 1 point either side of the spread. And, you know, you turn to your buddy and say, how do they know? How do they know with these spreads? How do they know? It's almost like they're making it a business. It's almost like Vegas is making this a business. We're trying to have fun here, and they've turned it into a business. Well, it's the same thing with this, horse racing. People are betting a lot of money on these races, and once the money comes in from the CAW players, there's a lot of money being pushed through. And that money's not stupid money. That's not foolish money. So that tote board does have something to say. Sometimes it lies to you, but sometimes it tells the truth. You have to handicap the tote board too while you're at it. But anyway, getting back to the race, 6-1 on early voting. Yes, I agree. That was a big price. And if you're looking at that and you're flexible, yeah, you put them on top and you do. But, you know, the other thing that I did when analyzing the race that entered my mind when I structured the ticket with hanging my hat on Epicenter, like, not only did I think he was the best horse, I knew he was going to be a short price, obviously. I knew he was, I thought he was the best horse. Gave him the best chance to win, and then I put, I believe I put early voting and creative secret oath.
Secret oath and then creative minister. Yep.
And then, yeah. But I thought that, did I think they could win? Yes. But I thought to myself, look, I really think that Epicenter's the best, and I'd rather put the majority of my resources with him winning. And then people said, well, why don't you have a saver? Well, I also didn't think it was going to pay me. I mean, I thought right. This was one of those races where you would have to, you know, punch it out rather than, you know, buy a put early voting and Secret Oath on top and then Epicenter second. But I really thought he'd win. So, in other words, very often we want to protect ourselves. And you say, well, if you protect yourself here, you'd have got your money back. Well, yes. And how are we playing? Are we playing? Well, are we like the guy who said, I hope I break even today. I could use the money.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Or are we trying to make money? I mean, are we trying to win? So that, but spending more time and effort on, and I'm by no means an expert on this subject. There are more well-versed, smarter people on this than me. I'm just trying to explain what I've picked up listening to others who really make a lot of sense and know how to make tickets. They know how to bet. And it's a part of the game that I really haven't paid enough attention to in my many decade career. And I'm going to blame it on the fact that for half my career, we didn't have all these exotics. You know, it was more.
Fair point.
Even exactly Santa Anita, which is where I cut my teeth, or California racing, as far as playing to any real extent, they had exactas on, I think, in my era, maybe three races, the fifth, seventh, and ninth, I think is how it worked. And they were $5 exactly. And they were on the fifth, seventh, and ninth. They had the daily double, no trifecta, no superfecta, one double, three exact, fifth, seventh, and ninth. Then I think they added an exact in the third. And then as time went by, added the different types of bets. And I remember distinctly sitting in Mr. Kilroe's office. Jimmy Kilroe was, I don't know his absolute title, besides King of Racing at Santa Anita. And he had been in New York and came west to help build California Racing. Excuse me, Steve. I apologize because I'm having a...
Not at all.
Some allergies here dropping down in my throat. And I remember sitting in his office as a young, excited publicity guy who also bet the races, who was so excited that now we were going to have, I believe it was trifectas on every race. I believe that's what it was. And Mr. Kilroe, sitting behind his gigantic desk, he shook his head. And I said, what's wrong? We're going to have trifectas in every race. It's going to be great. I mean, he shook his head. He said, it's the beginning of the end of racing. I said, what do you mean, Mr. Kilroe? He said, we're killing our customers. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. Now I do. After trying to hit pick five every day for 10 years, I now understand what he's talking about. The takeout and the drag on your bankroll, trying to hit right. exotic wages, it's draining. That's the exact word for it. It's draining. It drains your bankroll. It drains your spirit. You know, I have so many people that I know that play horses that say, I don't win anymore. I said, what do you mean you don't win anymore? I know exactly what you mean you don't win anymore. Because we're all playing gimmicks now. And they're tough to hit. Even when you're right, you're wrong sometimes. You know, you get nosed out for fourth in a superfecta. And you've got 5-1, 10-1, 4-1, and you get nosed out 30-1 by it. You know, it takes a lot of money to play, and you're not getting anything back. And if you're playing pick fives and pick fours all day, it drains your bankroll. You don't have any money left. And the horse you liked at 12-1, who you put in your pick fives, who won, what'd you have on him to win? Well, I could only bet $5 on him because my money was in the pick. I wanted him in the pick five. Yeah, well, did you get the pick five? No.
Exactly.
You know, it's just, but, now, why is there always a but? I don't understand why there's always a but. But when you hit those things for a small player, hey, that is sweet. That's why you play the game. Here comes $5,000. Here comes $10,000. Here comes whatever. So, yeah, Mr. Kilroy said it was going to be hard on players. Yes, it is. It's gotten worse. It's gotten progressively worse. But this is what some of the players want. We want this. We want to be able to make a lot for a little. Is it good for us? No. But you know what else? I like eating cheesesteaks. I can't eat 4 cheesesteaks a day. You know, it's not going to be good for me to do it 5 days a week. So you got to pick your spots a little bit.
No, fair.
End of story.
Fair point.
So anyway, I thought the trifecta paid 162, I think, maybe, for a dollar, maybe. That seemed
it's,
right.
66. 66.50.
Okay, 162 for a dollar, probably, right? And
The super was 162.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I was looking at then. All right, so that's what I was looking at. Yeah, I mean, I can live without that one. You know, it's not really gonna. Not gonna feed the chickens for the hen. Not gonna feed the hens.
Well, if you go, to be honest, though, and it's funny because after the race. And Tina said, "How did you do?" I said, "I said I didn't have anything. I not even the 2 day. The one that upset me a little bit was the 2 day double because the Black Eyed Susan Preakness double paid $101 for $2, and that was an outstanding return." To me, I was kicking myself for the way I structured from Friday to Saturday. So, and I had no excuse for not, you know, that actually was the bet that I felt bad about missing and was a significant return.
Yeah, I didn't swim in that pool. But here we go. You know, here's another one. And then, you know, we start with this. With the all stakes, this is not on Preakness Day, but like the 3-year-old all stake pick three, not for a dollar or whatever. You know, you start with all these different
$3
wagers.
Yeah.
There was a $2, was it $2, $3, $3,
$3. Yeah,
is it three? Yeah. Which I was alive to. Did you see probables for that? Do you remember off your? I couldn't find problems. I didn't know where. Maybe I didn't know where to look. Anyway, I was alive at the Center in the Derby, and I didn't know what they were paying. Anyway, you start with all these different exotic wagers, and hey, they're fun. They're great. They're challenging, but they're also a little bit bad for you.
Well, and that's a conversation worth further, you know, further discussion because I don't mind the bet a little, win a lot concept. Seth Merrow and I discuss this a lot. I mean, Seth plays the big exotics or the big multis. And puts small tickets in, and he says it, I'm not spending $96 or $144 on a pick five. He'll spend $24, $18, and he says when my handicapping is perfect for it, it'll be perfect. And he'll still, you know, if he hits a five or a $10,000 pick five, he is going to be ahead because he hasn't been plowing, you know. I see these big tickets, Johnny. You see them, you know, people publishing their tickets, and there's people that are doing this. You know, they're spending, you know, 288 and you know, big multiples and they're getting returns. It's not my approach personally. So it's a complex conversation.
Yes, it is. And again, it has to suit your budget, your lifestyle.
Right.
You know, you can only play what you can afford to play. You have to. Yeah. If you, what does that say? They always say at the racetrack that scared money never wins.
So yes.
I said, you know, I've heard that. How does terrified money do? Because there were days, not in a long time, but there were times in my life when I stepped up there with terrified money, and I was betting terrified money, where, you know, if you lose, there's going to be a long walk home, and that never works out. So it has to be your budget. It has to fit into what you do. And you have to be able to, your bankroll has to be able to withstand a string of consecutive defeats. A long string. If you're playing pick fives, they are tough to hit. You have to be ready to suffer an extended drought. And if you can do that and still keep firing, okay. Go after it. Hey, look, I have no complaints. I've hit great wagers. I think probably 30,000-40,000 is the most in my lifetime that I won, and it was more than once. So, look, I understand. I get it. I know why you want to play it, and I love to play it too. You just have to make it fit in the bankroll and understand that you could go 2 years without hitting a good one, and
right.
with good handicap, it's kind of like the Triple Crown winner. You have to be good enough. You have to be lucky enough.
Well said, Johnny. This was great. I appreciate it, and probably more to discuss, but we're out of time. We will talk next week.
We'll reconvene at a later date.
Exactly. XB Johnny D, everybody. Johnny, have a good afternoon. Sounds like you're off to play some golf.
No, not today. I got a right. Deck that's crying. It's crying. I got a stadium.
I hear
crying.
You.
Yeah, I got work right. to do. All right.
Yeah, get it done. Johnny D, everybody. And there you go. I do want to slip in this. We'll probably tomorrow we'll talk about Delaware Park, which opens on Wednesday, the little track that could. Drove by it yesterday on the way home, and today at Presque Isle, 4:12 post for the Tom Ridge Stakes, and the three-year-olds are going to go 6 furlongs. I see that Ravelli is attacking it with both one-timer and no-balls, but I like All in Sync, the three, Sean Bridgmahan for Steve Asmussen in this spot. So I'm going. I'm going to go for the price on Wilson. All in Sync, the three in the Tom Ridge today. Thanks to Johnny, Staten Fleury, Mig, Shug, and Norman Cassie. Day one of the recapping of Pimlico. We got tons more to do when we get together tomorrow here on At the Races, SiriusXM. If you missed anything, archive and podcast later. Replay here on the network 6 to 9. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Plenty of options, actually, as I look around, including, I mentioned Parks, and we got Finger Lakes, you got Thistledown, you got Will Rogers, and more. Have a great afternoon. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details. Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. Free $25 Derby bet and $200 deposit match with promo Steve25. Visit NairaBets.com.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.